and welcome to the Latin American History Podcast. Episode 151, A New Australia in Paraguay, Part 5. Last episode was dominated by political squabbles and splits amongst the colonists into three different groups. Today, we look at what was happening back in Australia and watch the unique political vision which had driven the foundation of the settlements in the first place slip away and be abandoned. So while all of these splits were happening in Paraguay, in Australia, Casey was trying to win the man left in charge of the association over to Lane's side, but failing. As far as he was concerned, everyone had put their money into the communal fund to establish a new society, of which Lane was the initial driving force, but not the leader, as the whole point was that political power was diffuse and representative, instead of vested in one leader. Now he was hearing that Lane had left the association, but that his was supposed to be the real continuation of the project, and so could he please sever all ties with the previous organisation and anyone else who might turn up from South America, claiming to be the actual association and disparaging Lane, and transfer all of that pooled wealth to Lane's new continuation project, which needed money as it was starting from scratch. To this man, and to those who had put their money in, but who were still in Australia waiting for the go-ahead to be shipped to Paraguay, at best this sounded like a concerning mess, which put the viability of the colony in doubt. At worst, it sounded like the whole thing had perhaps been a scam, designed to defraud them of their money, while Lane disappeared with it to who knows where. There was a mechanism whereby those who never left Australia should have been able to withdraw most of their investment if they decided to abandon the scheme. But Lane had been a bit dodgy here. Instead of putting all this money into a specifically set up bank account, like he said he would, he'd instead used it to improve the Royal Tar. The association's representative in Australia, then, was having to deal with increasingly irate members there, and he was worried that he might even face personal legal consequences as the association's representative in the country. The money was not going to be released to Lane, he decided, especially not now that those members in Australia had started hiring lawyers to get their money back. He was legally responsible, and he said that he would not transfer the money unless all the debts were paid first. The only way Casey could do this was by asking those association members in Australia, who he had managed to convince that Lane was still in the right, for even more money. They didn't have any money left to give, so Casey set about trying to recruit new people. This wasn't particularly successful. Things got complicated and bogged down in financial details, which I won't go into here. Just as in a messy divorce, which was sort of what had happened when the colony had split, the part where the arguing and splitting happened was followed by the bit where assets have to be accounted for and divided. A few months later, the deadlock was broken when the association's accounts were audited. The audit found nothing suspicious, but the man in charge of the association in Australia disappeared before it was complete. Why he did so was unclear. There was some suspicion about a secret affair, but probably the fear of personal liability for the situation was part of it. Rumours emerged that he went to Japan, but really he adopted a new name and went to New Zealand and then Tasmania, where despite being in semi-hiding, under his new identity, he became a politician and even the Speaker of the State Parliament for 2 terms. His disappearance broke the deadlock and gave Casey control of the association in Australia. Soon, though, the account books went missing, which made the financial situation even murkier. Where they went was never resolved. Having retrieved the Royal Tar from the Argentine tax authorities, Lane sent it back to Australia to sell it to raise more money. Lane used the money to pay off creditors and restructure the legal basis of the association to recognise that it had split into different colonies, although many of those who were supposed to be paid according to this new arrangement were not. This included those people in Australia who had been waiting to come out to Paraguay, some of whom still wanted to. He did all this without telling Casey, who was outraged when he found out that the people who were justifiably hounding him were not getting their money, and now there wasn't even a ship to take them to Paraguay. A few who were still loyal to his new settlement, including his wife, did make it across to South America. A couple of days after she arrived, however, their son died when he was hit in the chest by a ball while playing cricket. If you've never seen a cricket ball, as I imagine many of you listening in the USA have not, they are extremely solid and heavy, definitely capable of killing a person. Casey also returned to Paraguay with a lot of questions for Lane about the financial manoeuvring. He would make New Australia rather than Cozumel his home, and was even elected its president for a time. It seems that he had lost all trust in Lane and all hope forever working with him again. For all intents and purposes, and as unsatisfactory as it was for many people, that was the end of the legal, financial, and bureaucratic problems in Australia. Nobody else was coming either to join them. And so we come back to the quote I started last episode with. The end of New Australia was not a dramatic event. Perhaps the splits into separate settlements were the dramatic event that precipitated its end. But the ending of the project was a slow and gradual one, which dragged on for years afterwards. The exciting political vision of building a utopia was long gone. Nobody had really believed that this was going to be a brave new society, since not long after they had first arrived. The innovative political and economic systems they had created lasted longer than the belief in them, but they were slowly dropped. Not too long after Lane's son had died, he was hit by a serious illness which almost killed him the first time it struck him, and it proved to be reoccurring. His ideas began to get stranger. He'd always been religious, but during his illness, he had raved biblical ideas. He also began to believe that the Germanic English were superior to everyone else, partially blaming the Celtic Scots and Irish and their Australian descendants for New Australia's problems. He learnt of German settlements in southern Brazil and British Guyana on South America's north coast, and apparently hoped that maybe they would all unite one day and New Australia would become part of a great Anglo-Germanic population which would join the British Empire. He even talked privately to his wife of marching all the way to Guyana. Have a look at the map to see how unrealistic that idea was, given the distance and the fact that it would have involved walking through the Amazon. Instead, he satisfied himself with leaving for England to recruit more settlers. Now, it must be said that he apparently did get Cozumel running fairly well during this difficult personal time. And besides his absolute leadership, it ran roughly according to the political ideology originally envisioned. He was gone on this trip for a long time, however, a year and a half, and so, in his absence, and beginning pretty much as soon as he left, Cozumel followed the same path as New Australia. Although he will eventually return, for all intents and purposes, this is the end of his influence over the story. It was quite probable that this slide away from utopian ideals and productive management was not caused by his absence, although this cemented it, but that it had already begun, and his trip away was his answer to this problem. People from the two settlements began interacting again, and Sibbald, the man quoted at the beginning of last episode, was one of those who drifted off with a few friends from each settlement to find new land nearby. They had chosen each other, and chosen to do this based on personal friendship rather than political ideas. Their aim was to settle their new land as ordinary private farmers, living in their own properties, just as ordinary people do. There was to be no pooling of resources for them. As the ideology began to fade, the dispute between the settlements became less important, especially when combined with the emergence of these new private settlements. A council was created with representatives from each colony, but as things were gradually done in a more conventional private way, the power of the leadership diminished and became less important, less worth fighting over.
Listen up, football fans, you won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
There were many other little chips at the communal idealist ethos. A couple of Cosme's inhabitants were caught rustling cattle from their settlement, and gradually others began privately trading outside of the colony and keeping their own savings of money. People just simply stopped contributing towards communal stores, and the population slowly trickled away over the next few years. Many of those who remained did so only because they believed that if the colony became small enough to be abolished, all of the communally owned property would be divided among those few, and so anyone who stuck it out would get a large share with which to build their new lives. This happened in the original New Australia in 1897, 3 years after that second set of colonists arrived. Everything was valued and sold. The money was divided equally, and those who wanted to remain allowed to have the value of their house and land deducted from their payout in exchange for keeping it. About 70 people stayed. The Paraguayan government sent a representative, and the new non-communal arrangement was made legal. Meanwhile in Cosme, Lane finally returned, having only recruited a handful of people. He saw how the communal ethos had disappeared and decided to make a statement to try to revive it. One of the settlers had obtained a pig somehow. He shouldn't have been able to privately own it to begin with, and he gave the meat to his family and a few of his friends, rather than sharing it with everyone. Lane decided to call everyone together to vote to expel the man. This was agreed, but quite a few people rebelled and left as well. In 2 months, 38 people were left, just a third of the population before Lane returned. Among those who left were almost all of Lane's closest allies, as well as quite a few of the new English recruits, who decided that this life wasn't for them. This was the final straw. Lane as well gave up on the project, blaming everyone but himself. He went to New Zealand, where he lived for another 18 years before dying. You might remember that in his time as a journalist before New Australia began, he had written anti-Chinese articles in his newspaper, doing so out of what he believed was his concern for the Australian worker. When I mentioned that in the first episode of the series, I also talked about how some things, like attitude to race, were not always aligned to other political issues on the right and left in the same way that they are today. Well, perhaps because of this pre-existing attitude, perhaps partly because of the difficult time he had had recently with his illness and the death of his son, but definitely partly because of the failure of New Australia, Lane's politics in New Zealand became quite different, and now they did match a strand of politics which still exists today. Clearly, whatever he believed, he would do it to the extreme, and so he became an ultra-conservative, and those ideas about Anglo-Germanic superiority came to the fore. They manifested as a love of the British Empire. But then they had to be modified when World War I began at the very end of his life. His love of the British Empire and the English people remained. He still believed them to be superior. But now, of course, he couldn't include the Germans in this because they were the enemy. And so instead he decided that they were in fact the very worst people in the world. As part of his new belief that nothing should get in the way of the progress of the empire, he took to writing articles loudly and fiercely criticising workers' unions in New Zealand for going on strike. This is the strand of his new politics, which was most clearly the polar opposite of the ideals which had taken him to Paraguay. Most people who had not already left the Australian settlements in Paraguay now did so. They aimed for either Australia, Britain, or other British possessions like New Zealand or South Africa. A chunk, though, went to Argentina and settled there. Cosme hung on, and some of its original purpose, in name at least, survived under the guidance of Lane's brother until 1905, when it underwent the same process of valuing and dividing of assets which New Australia had done. And so some people did remain in Paraguay. Nothing really remained of their political project to mark them out from their neighbours. But what about culturally? There is still a town where the original settlement stood, named Nueva Australia. It's pretty small, and like the Confederado town in Brazil, which was the subject of last month's Friend of the Podcast episode, most of its population appear to be culturally pretty much Paraguayan. Cosme also still exists and is even smaller, as does Nueva Londres, New London, immediately to the north of Nueva Australia, which had its origins as an outpost on New Australia's land. There are apparently about 2,000 people today in Paraguay who have ancestry linked to New Australia, and names like Cadogan, Jones and MacLeod can be found there, even if the first names are Spanish today. In 1924, a representative of the Australian government wrote to New Australia, asking if anyone would be interested in assistance to return. The response was, and this is a quote, "On your repatriation idea, I'm afraid it's too late. Speaking of New Australia, nearly all the second generation have gone native, i.e. married native Paraguayan women, and quite a few of the third generation cannot speak the language of their fathers. As for us old-timers, we are set in the ways of the country. 30 years is a long time. And if you fetched us over, we would only be fit for the old men's homes. Certainly we complain. After the last revolution, when they played merry hell with our few belongings and treated us most disrespectfully, we were going to sell out, chase out in any old way, so long as we got a long way from Paraguay. Three families did clear out, and two more are talking of doing so. But the rest of us have settled down to wallow, through to the finish or the next revolution." We know that five Australians, Jones, Drakeford, King, Bates and Kennedy, died in the Chaco War with Bolivia. Most settled into life as private farmers in one of the original villages, but some moved away. One family became shopkeepers in Villarica, for example. Suter began researching his book in 1963 by placing adverts in newspapers in Australia, New Zealand, England, Paraguay and Argentina. He says that he received more than 60 letters from people connected to New Australia. He then travelled to interview them and see their family photos and accounts. He went to New Australia and interviewed people there, taking new photos which appeared in his book. Some of them had moved to Asunción. When he visited Cosme, it had a population of about 300, a quarter of whom were descended from the Australians. None of them had much money, he said, but they did have land and cattle. They passed the last remaining wooden hut that had been built while Lane was still in charge. The descendants of the Australians who guided him said that a Paraguayan family now owned it. They all spoke Spanish and Guarani as first languages, but most could understand English to varying extents. The Kennedy family, who showed him around Nueva Londres, appeared to be the most prosperous of the Australians, and they owned several large ranches. Jamie Kennedy told Souter that about half of New Australia's original land was still owned by the descendants, although many of them had now married into the rest of the population and were indistinguishable in manner, language, behaviour and looks, unless they told you their surnames. When Souter visited, he would have been investigating this piece of history, just about in living memory for those who had perhaps been children in the settlement. Of course, now pretty much as much time has gone by between New Australia and his visit to today. So presumably, that process of disconnection from Australia is much further along. It might well be complete. If you've enjoyed this series on New Australia and you want to do something to help out, one thing that's really useful is leaving a review wherever you get your podcasts from. It helps new people to discover the show. Thank you to everyone who's done this, and thank you to everyone for listening.
You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast, written and recorded by me, Max Argent, edited by Alex McNamara. If you've enjoyed the podcast and want to get access to extra episodes, you can become a friend of the podcast. There's information about how to do this in the episode description. The podcast is also available on YouTube by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. If you'd like to send me a message, or if you have any questions, you can email me at historyoflatinamericapodcast@gmail.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.